time. Aristotle has watched what has happened over a long period. He said, we must somehow bring forward the best. Well, you know, in a lot of ways, that's an unobjectionable proposition. It's pretty hard to disagree with that. We could disagree with the idea of the few, but it's hard to disagree with the idea that we ought to be governed by our best. What Aristotle wasn't so clear on, how many should the few be? Probably not very many. Aristotle once said, for example, that a state should be no larger than all its citizens could be assembled by the cry of a herald. So what the few who led them might be is hard to say. How would we get the best? Aristotle goes very fuzzy on us there. By what process would we identify, promote, bring forward, and reconcile others to the rule of the best? So Aristotle is quite content to say things haven't worked as well as they should have done over a long period of time. What we need is a small number of rulers who are the best, but how do we get them? Well, he didn't help us very much on that particular point. Plato, meanwhile, thinks also about ideal states. He thinks of a state where kings would be philosophers and philosophers would be kings. Now, you may recall that in the last lecture, when we talked about Plato and his idea of a moral society, he imagined the soul of an individual as made up of reason and courage and appetites. And he said that each of us is probably not perfectly arrayed, and so indeed, as each of us is not arrayed, so our societies are not arrayed so as to reflect this sort of transcendent reality. For the moment, though, I just want to draw your attention back to the highest of these qualities, reason, nous, mind. So from Plato's point of view, it stood to reason that in an ideal state, those best in mind should be entrusted with rule. They would be most apt to this task. Plato reckons that this will not be a large group. He does say, for example, that this is not attributable to birth, it is not attributable to wealth, it is not attributable to social class, and he even said he thought it improbable, but it could apply to women. That women could be among the governing class. He thought it improbable, unlikely, but he said it's possible. That's a rather interesting notion. But Plato leaves us also with a kind of an interesting problem. If we're going to have a relatively small number of people marked particularly by their intellectual capacity, by reason, and these are the people who will make laws, who will implement laws, who will oversee the system, how do we choose them? Who are they? Where do we get them? How do we find them? How do we bring them forward? How do we reconcile others to them? Just like his pupil Aristotle, Plato sort of fails us at that point. He doesn't actually tell us how we're going to do this. Though it is interesting, is it not, that Plato and Aristotle finally, on reflecting on the nature of the polis as historical experience or as intellectual proposition, both arrive at oligarchy. Both arrive at rule by a few. Now, mind you, they don't quite tell us how many, you see. They don't tell us quite how we're going to get them, and so on. But they say rule by a few. I don't know about all of you. For those of us in the academic world, it's a nightmare to think of government by committee. But in any case, that's something like what was proposed here. All right, so some people in the Greek world are now thinking about ideal states. They're basically looking around and saying, you know, what we've got's not so hot. What about an ideal state? There are others, perhaps a bit more realistic, perhaps a bit more pragmatic, who are looking at the world around them and say, well, you know, we got to deal with what's here. What are we going to do? One of the first of these is Isocrates, mind the I, Isocrates, not Socrates. He's born in 436 BC, dies in 338. He gave rise to a doctrine called Panhellenism, all Greekism. What does this mean? Isocrates' great dream, his great hope, his great desire was to unite all the Greeks, Athens and Sparta in the lead, in a great crusade against Persia. Now, there's something very interesting going on here. There is a creative process going on here. Isocrates is imagining a past, a past at the time of the Persian Wars, when all the Greeks were united, when they stood as one, when they faced the common foe.